When I turned on my TV, I saw those images that I guess the whole world saw, and I was paralyzed and I couldn't believe that it was happening in my hometown. All I could do was cry. That was the worst week of my life, not knowing what had happened for sure, not knowing where my sister was. Life is not their priority. Their priority is their profit.
Welcome to another episode of the ESG Factor podcast. Today I'm talking to Amanda Andrade, an English teacher turned activist from the town of Brumadinho in Brazil. In 2019, Brumadinho suffered a catastrophic mining disaster under the watch of Vale, one of the largest mining companies in the world. Sadly, the tail dam collapse, which could have been avoided, claimed the life of Amanda's sister Natalia and hundreds more. Today Amanda is here to share her story. First of all, Amanda, thank you for taking the time to talk to me today. I know this can't be easy, but I think as we both agree, it's important that more people hear this story to truly understand the impact that companies can have in towns like your own when sustainability is not taken seriously.
Thank you, Vincent. Indeed, yeah, it's not easy to relive everything that I went through, but I do know it is very important to highlight the consequences of mining, and especially the consequences of irresponsible mining. It's something that the whole world needs to be aware of and that everybody needs to support in order for us not to have any more crimes like what has happened in Brazil.
Can you kind of give listeners a little bit of a picture of where you grew up and the importance of mining in your town?
All right. Yeah, my region is very important for the mining industry since colonial times. My town specifically is surrounded by mountains that are filled with iron ore. And so there are several companies that came here to this town. Like, I believe it started in this around the 60s. And mining is the main economical activity, which brings everything else that comes to, in the past that came to my hometown, which is a small town. And so Vale, of course, is the biggest company. It's the main company. It's the one that everybody wanted to work for, the one that offered the best benefits and prospects for a future, for promotion, for development, personal and career-wise. So I grew up seeing people wearing the famous green uniform on the streets, and the trains loaded with the iron ore going through the town. And even our river is not a blue river, it's a brown river, because it receives like water that comes from the process of mining the mountains. So everything, you know, is related to mining here. And my sister, of course, once she started college, she wanted to get an internship in what was the best company, and that was Vale. And so she went through the selection process along with many other candidates. And when she got approved, we were very happy for her because we knew that it would be something very positive for her career. And after she did the internship and she graduated college, she was hired. And again, it was something very good for her. We were supportive and happy, and we trusted Vale a lot. It was like a common sense, or everybody had this image that they were this very responsible company, very safe, very how can I say, that they were indeed like responsible, that they cared for the lives of the people, that they cared for the communities that surrounded their mines, that they cared about the environment, that like they had these protection areas to like compensate for the damage. That's how we thought of them. And when in 2015 Mariana happened, it was a terrible shock for not only Brazil, but I believe the whole world.
Yeah, I think just for listeners, when they hear Mariana, they mightn't be familiar with it, but basically it was a tail dam failure in another part of Brazil in 2015. And I believe it was the worst environmental disaster in the history of Brazil. There was I think I saw 19 people killed. I'm not sure on the exact final number, but environmentally, the damage was hugely destructive. Preparing for this conversation, I wanted to understand a little bit more about tail dams, because when we think about dams, we probably think about a concrete construction to stop water coming past and control the flow of water. Whereas a tail dam is actually the byproduct of the mining process. And it's like an earth-filled kind of embankment that is created. And then that stores this effectively a toxic type slurry is effectively what it is. So I think when people originally hear, I know myself anyway, when I hear dam failures, I feel like the construction has somehow failed. But in these situations, they're man-made disasters because we've effectively mined something from our natural resources, and then we've created this byproduct, which we've tried to keep in check through this kind of earth embankment. So that happened in 2015. And after that happened, did that change the perception of Vale in your own area? Because, you know, that was a big disaster. And then, you know, there was probably maybe I've heard of some rumors about kind of safety issues in your own area, because there's hundreds of these tail dams in Brazil. So did that create a sense of fear or a sense of worry in your own town prior to your own disaster happening?
Well, yeah, because it was a shock for everybody. Nobody thought something like that would happen, because everybody had trust in the companies that they followed the rules and the safety requirements. And I actually spoke to Natalia about this before the tragedy happened here in Brumadinho, like if there was any chance something like that could happen. And she told me that, yeah, there was a chance, but she was not afraid. She was not afraid of anything. I think because she trusted Vale, she trusted the company she worked, because they had these crazy safety procedures in the mine regarding daily things, like changing a light bulb, like crossing the street out of the crossing path. So I think for the employees, it was unthinkable that the company would not follow the safety requirements for a dam, for something so potentially destructive. And where she worked, the dam had been constructed above the area where the offices, the canteen, and everything was. But I think after Mariana, everybody realized that, yeah, it was possible that another break could burst again.
And so then in that terrible day, it's January 25th, 2019, I think the collapse happened, they say, at 12:28 p.m. So as you said, the canteen and everything was underneath the tail dam. So everybody was at lunch at the time. Well, not everybody, but a couple of hundred people were in the canteen, including your sister, I believe. And the collapse happened. And I suppose there was really no chance at that point, given where the dam was situated.
Yeah, given where it was situated, and given that the alarms that were supposed to alert people didn't work that day, simply didn't work. So everybody was caught by surprise. They were having lunch, and this wave at high speeds came and destroyed literally everything in the way. Very few people could escape.
Yeah, I think if anyone wants to see more on it, BBC did an excellent documentary on it, and it's scary watching it. So I can only imagine what it was like for the people that were involved in it. And in the town, it was described as just a big bang, and people were panicking. It was just mayhem because they didn't know what potentially was going to happen or what had happened.
Yeah, in the beginning, I mean, the first hour after it happened, it was chaos in the city center, I mean, in the town center here. The police came to the streets with sirens alerting everybody to get out and to close the shops, because nobody knew what was going to happen, if the river would flood and then flood the town itself. Nobody knew what it actually meant when they heard that the dam had burst. And my mom was working in the city center at that time. And she, her first thought was to contact Natalia, but she couldn't because the phone lines were jammed. And my father was fishing, and my mother also couldn't contact him. and she escaped. I mean, she left the center, and she went home, grabbed important things like documents, and she tried to find my dad. And then someone notified my dad, and he left the river proximities. And then from there, it was just chaos, just confusion, crying, screaming. People were desperate, trying to locate the people they knew that were around the area of Valley. I wasn't here when it happened, so I heard it from my phone. The first notification I got was someone asking, are you okay? Is your sister okay? And then I'm like, what happened? And then my sister had replied to this message. It was on a social media platform saying, yes, my sister is okay. She has been rescued. And then when I turned on my TV, I saw those images that I guess the whole world saw, all of that mud, which is not actually mud. It looks like mud, but it's poisonous waste from mining. Yes. And the helicopters and the firemen. And I saw all of that and I was paralyzed and I couldn't believe that it was happening in my hometown. All I could do was cry. And I contacted my family. And the news that we had received was that my sister had been rescued. There was a lot of misinformation in the beginning, a lot. And Valley itself did not contact the families, did not contact anybody. People were crazy, going crazy, trying to find information, going to hospitals, going to the places around where they were working with the rescued people. And the government went crazy in the beginning, also trying to prepare every hospital to receive people injured. But unfortunately, only bodies were being recovered. Very few people injured alive were rescued. Most of them had been killed by the strength of the tailings. And that was the worst week of my life, not knowing what had happened for sure, not knowing where my sister was. We were so afraid that she was lost in the woods, that she was hurt, that she was unconscious somewhere. Not knowing is the worst feeling. And thank God they found her a few days after the tragedy, and that gave us a little bit of a relief to know that she was not suffering. But many families, you know, until today haven't had the chance to have this little bit of relief. You know, they haven't had the chance to have a coffin, to have a funeral. And even those of us who did have a funeral, we didn't have an honorable funeral for our loved ones. Everything had to happen so quickly. There was literally a line for funerals. Everything had to be time managed. It was horrible. What this town went through is horrible. It's despicable. Many despicable things happened. And these things remain with you. You can't forget what happened.
Yeah, you mentioned the physical and emotional impact that it had on you and your family and people that lost loved ones. And from the story, it appears that the response by Valley and the senior management of the company effectively made that situation worse. The lack of respect, the lack of contact, the initial communication. I think I remember you saying something about the president of the company standing up and saying that Valley was Brazil's crown jewel, things like that, at a time that was very emotional. And
yeah, absolutely. We saw the total lack of respect from Valley. They showed from the very beginning that the priority is not the people, that it's not what it should be, you know, that they care mostly about themselves, their image, what they are. And the president at the time showed exactly what the company stands for. There was a moment of silence for the victims, and everybody stood up in this moment of silence. The president didn't even care to stand up. And yeah, he did say that Valley was Brazil's crown gem, that it couldn't be punished for what had happened. And now this man, along with another over a dozen others they're being tried for murder. That's how serious it is. So it was not an accident. It was not a fatality. They were completely aware of the risk that dam presented. There were meetings regarding that dam behind closed doors. Decisions were made to continue the operations, not regarding how unsafe it was, what a risk it was to the people around it, especially to all the people working there underneath it, like my sister. They knew it was unsafe. They didn't prioritize lives or safety. They prioritized the continuance of their operation. And so they even were able to get a fraudulent report attesting the safety of that dam. They, along with TÜV SÜD, the German company, these two companies are being tried for murder because of their actions, because they attested the safety of a dam that was completely unsafe, and they did perforations in the dam 5 days before it burst, when they were not supposed to do that. They are guilty. They are totally guilty for the loss of the 272 lives. And they have only disappointed us, the victims, from day one. They do not care about doing what's right, about doing reparations correctly, about honoring the lives of the lost ones. They only and merely care about their image, their profits, and that's it.
Their behavior showed that they ignored the warning signs that could have potentially stopped this from happening. And that's what's really, really sad about this situation. And, you know, you mentioned the respect in the town for Valet and the idea of people, you know, walking to work with the green uniform and the kind of respect that kind of garnered for people that were, you know, starting their lives and building families. They had a safe income, I suppose, working there. But one of the challenges, I suppose, is to have a culture where people can speak out. And as we've looked at this, has it become clear that maybe within Valet there was a certain level of reverence that people maybe were afraid to speak out as well? Maybe that there was a culture that didn't really empower the people in the town that were working there.
Well, yeah, there was a culture of respect, of trust. And after Brumadinho happened and after the behavior of that the company displayed, it was like a glass shattered for all of us, that they are not good or responsible or ethical, that their ethos is just a matter of words. It's not what they actually do. It's not their practices. And I think most people had this trust in them, that if they had a report, it was because it was safe. Everybody thought that if it weren't safe, that they would do what was right, that they would try to prevent death, because their motto was life comes first. And we saw that that is nothing. That is nothing but a lie. Life is not their priority. Their priority is their profit.
And I think that's an important point that people need to remember, because this is at a time when sustainability is in vogue. Everybody's talking about sustainability, the application of environmental, social and governance standards. If this stuff is not applied with rigor and in an authentic way, these types of disasters are going to continue happening, and it's across industries. And that's what's really kind of galling for people like yourself who have been impacted so negatively by this. And then I suppose after this, because the company was responding in this way and the way you were treated, that basically pushed you into activism. You felt, I have to speak out. People need to know this. This has to change. That led you to speaking in Paris, I believe.
Yeah. After, like, I had this epiphany, this moment of glass sharing when it comes to what I thought about Valley, I decided that I had to speak up, that I had to do something. I couldn't let people continue thinking that this was a responsible company. And I wanted to make the truth heard across the globe. And that's when I decided to become an activist and to join initiatives and other fighters and human rights defenders And I met some people here in Brazil who started introducing me to other people, and I met some German activists, and later on I was invited to speak at the Principles for Responsible Investment Convention in Paris in 2019. And there I met important people like Adam Matthews, who told me that they were also devastated with what had happened, and that they also wanted to help pursue change, and they wanted to start the initiative with investors and have a global standard on these tailings dams. And I've been working with the Church of England and the Swedish Council of Ethics ever since. And I see some change already. I see that people are eager to learn and to know what's happening and to press, you know, put pressure on the sector and companies to change and to not allow for this to continue. So I see some development has occurred, but of course a lot more needs to happen. Vale and Tufsut have to be punished for what happened, because if impunity goes on, they will continue behaving irresponsibly. They will continue doing it if they don't have any consequence for their crimes. And so that's why the fight must go on, and that's why I continue speaking about what happened, because it's a systematic problem. It's not only Vale. There are other companies out there that, of course, do the same. And when a dam bursts, the damage is so extensive, and it's not possible to recover what was lost. It's not possible to recover the lives, the environment. Therefore, we need to speak up about it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's like something big like this happens, and then people just move on to the next thing that happens, and it's kind of forgotten about to a certain extent, and you're still dealing with the cleanup. And particularly in this type of a disaster, you've got the massive loss of life, but the environmental damage continues, because these materials are seeping into your land where you grow your crops, where you fish and sustain your life. So the impact goes far beyond the day that it happens. It goes on for decades. And in terms of justice, then the case that was brought against Vale in terms of the civil case, there was a settlement of $7 billion for, one would have hoped, the victims. But it's turned out that the $7 billion that has been agreed was done behind closed doors. The mayor of your municipality didn't have much involvement. And it appears that only 30% of that is going to go to your municipality, and the rest will go to the state. And then the victims don't really get taken care of. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. This settlement was reached, but the actual victims were not involved. We were not involved. It was something between the state and Vale for the state's benefit. The victims are still not being repaired. I have not received any indemnities until today, and I'm fighting in court against Vale for it, because there was a settlement for the families. It was reached in 2019 after short negotiations. Everybody was still terribly, terribly affected psychologically, mentally. Nobody had the capacity back then to fight for what was right, just, and worthy of what had happened here. And so it was something terrible and inhumane, which I totally disagree with. And so I decided to fight against Vale. But as you can imagine, it's David against Goliath. They have all the power, all the resources, and they appeal all the court decisions. It's not just for me, but for every relative who decided to go to court to try to fight for at least a little bit of justice. Because everything that happened, all the pain, all the suffering, all the destruction was ultimately because of money, because they couldn't prioritize life. They prioritized money. And therefore, I believe that punishing them with money is one of the ways. Of course, not the only, but it's one of them. And so I couldn't just accept the terrible, terrible settlement that was reached. But at the same time, I know that I'm fighting against a giant. And many people think that, oh, we saw this news, $7 billion was reached in the settlement. But it's not for the victims. It's for the state.
Yeah, and it's tiny in the grand scheme of things as well. And I saw some of the meetings to discuss this between the mayor and local community people. And you can see the outrage, the hurt, the emotion coming out when people speak. And some people would say the mayor is just a political pawn for the powerful mining companies. Others would say at least this mayor is trying to do something. But at a state and national level, his hands are quite tied because he doesn't have any autonomy, he would say. But I did pick up on one of the things he said. It was a necessary evil, the mining industry in the local area, because your whole economy depended on these companies providing work. And I think this is the great conundrum that we face in trying to reach a point of sustainable economic development, is that if we say, okay, well, we can no longer have these mines and these types of organizations in developing countries like Brazil, well, then we have to figure out some other way to take care of people. So we have to find some way of removing that necessary evil. And I don't know if there's an answer, but I think in terms of the solution that you were saying, you'd at least like to see as a starting point, some form of independent organization to come in and say, okay, this mining company operating in Brazil, they're reaching the highest standards. Do you think that's where we have to start?
Well, it's a fact that mining is an essential activity for society. We need our phones, we need our cars. But what cannot happen is that it happens in such an irresponsible way. And so I do believe that since the companies cannot be trusted because they don't follow the standards that are currently in place, because they have proven over and over again that they are willing to kill, that they are willing to place money above anything and everything, an independent organization to assess what's going on is more than crucial, and it's like a totally necessary step toward a better and safer future.
Yeah, we'll have to watch that one closely to see it happens. And I think the big investment funds and the big endowments and the universities and everybody that's investing money talk about active stewardship. And I think this is a big part of it, to say, right, we have some independent, verifiable research or reports to say these companies are performing at a level that makes sure that these risks are not there, that the sustainability is actually being followed through on. That's hugely important. And so you're still in the middle of various battles with this company, and you've obviously... Now you can see things are starting to return to some normality for these companies. I can see their stock price has gone back up. What about the town itself? Is there a lot of division between people that are on one side maybe fighting for justice, and then others are just saying, look, we want to get on with it and continue working?
Well, the survivors, they are also struggling barely to survive. I don't think they have the strength to take like one side of the fight, because they went through so much also, and many people actually were forced to work with the firemen on rescuing bodies and so on. As I said, despicable things happened here. But yeah, there is a lot of division. Of course, there are people who also think more individually about themselves and what they want to gain out of the tragedy than in actually achieving justice and what is right for the people and the community. But nonetheless, we have to stand up for what is true, what is honest, what is right, regardless of what other people are doing.
Yeah, you have to keep on fighting. I saw that Vale have appointed 4 new board members, and depending on what side of the table you could see it as being a good thing, or some would say they haven't gone far enough. But I suppose your main objective now is to keep the pressure on as an activist and keep the awareness of companies like Vale and others in Brazil to make sure that they are actually putting sustainability at the core of what they're doing. And that's going to be a big fight, I imagine, because there's some big change needed.
Absolutely. I think keeping awareness is extremely important, because they invest a lot in creating the image that they want to present to people, which mostly isn't true. So I think showing the truth, showing what actually happened, what actually happens here, is so important. So people are not fooled or deceived by the companies like it has happened before.
Yeah, no, I think so. One of the things that from our, as you said, how companies portray themselves in the investment world, we call it greenwashing is the term that is used. So people saying, okay, I really care about sustainability, but then on the other hand, what they're actually doing on the ground is dramatically different. And that's a huge problem, because it erodes the trust in the entire system. And that's something that with this podcast, we're trying to connect the two worlds, the people that are making decisions at an investor and consumer level, and the people that are actually on the ground impacted by the behavior of the companies. And so until we bring that connection closer together, I think it's going to be very difficult to achieve the cultural change that we need at a planetary level, because we tend to look at these things in isolation. And I think what we're hoping, and that's why I'm really grateful for you taking the time to talk today, is that hearing your stories will bring more of a connection to those decisions that they're making, and that we can look at this in a more holistic way and think about not just Ireland or Brazil or Guatemala. We think about this as a planetary approach and some form of sustainable economic development where we can avoid these types of events, and we can still raise the prosperity levels of people in emerging countries like Brazil and others. So I have to say, I'm really grateful for you telling your story. I know it can't be easy. I'm sure it's very emotional to keep talking about it. And I think you're very brave to continue to fight and share your story, because it is very much David and Goliath. I think your sister would be very proud of you. I'm sure your family are very proud of you. And I genuinely wish you the best with your fight. And if there's anything that I can do in terms of writing any stuff on this or sharing any articles, or if you want to come on again on the podcast to share any of your story, definitely happy to have you on, because this is something that people need to hear about.
Thank you so much.
Cheers for taking the time to listen to the ESG Factor podcast. If you're interested in a more sustainable future, then check out theesgfactor.com for details on our Patreon community and how you can support the making of more content like this. I'm Vincent, and I'll catch you later.